Ceasefire. Snow slanted across the frozen marshland, driven in fitful gusts. It drifted in a low mound against the wooden observation post. The antennae of the life detector atop the OP swept back and forth in a rhythmic half-circle like so many frozen sticks, brittle with rime ice. The snow hid all distance, distorted substance into gray shadows without definition. A suggestion of brightness to the north indicated the sun that hung low on the horizon even at midnight in this season. Out of possible choices of a place for a world-shattering invention to be born, this did not appear in the running. A rifle bullet spanged against an abandoned tank northeast of the OP moaned away into the distance. The bullet only emphasized the loneliness, the isolation of the OP set far out ahead of the front lines of the Arctic battlefields of 1972. Behind the post to the south stretched the long reaches of the Canadian Barren Lands. An arm of the Arctic Ocean below Banks Island lay hidden in the early snowstorm to the north. One operator, drugged to shivering wakefulness, stood watch in the OP. The space around him was barely 6 feet in diameter, crammed with equipment, gridded screens glowing a pale green with spots that indicated living flesh. A covey of ptarmigan, a possible Arctic fox. Every grid point on the screens held an aiming code for mortar fire. This site was designated OP-114 by the Allied command. It was no place for the sensitive man who had found himself pushed, shunted, and shamed into this position of terror. The fact that he did occupy OP-114 only testified to the terrible urgencies that governed this war. Again a rifle bullet probed the abandoned tank. Corporal Larry Hulser, crouched over the OP's screens, tried to get a track on the bullet. It had seemed to come from the life glow spot he had identified as probably an Arctic fox. Much too small for a human, he thought, or is it? The green glow of the screens underlighted Hulser's dark face, swept shadows upward where they merged with his black hair. He chewed his lips, his eyes darting nervously with the fear he could never hide, the fear that made him the butt of every joke back at the barracks. Hulser did not look like a man who could completely transform his society. He looked merely like an indefinite lump of humanity encased in a life detector shield, crouching in weird green shadows. In the distant days of his youth, one of Hulser's chemistry professors had labeled him during a faculty tea, a mystic, sure to fail in the modern world. The glow spot Hulser had identified as a fox shifted its position. Should I call out the artillery? Hulser wondered. No. This could be the one they'd choose to investigate with a flying detector, and if the pilot identified the glow as a fox... Hulser cringed with the memory of the hazing he had taken on the wolf he'd reported 2 months earlier.
Wolfie, Hulser!
I'm too old for this game, he thought. 38 is too old. If there were only some way to end... Another rifle bullet spanged against the shattered tank. Hulser tried to crouch lower in the tiny wooden OP. The bullets were like questing fingers reaching out for unrecognized metal to identify an OP. When the bullets found their mark, a single 200-millimeter mortar shell followed, pinpointed by echo phones. Or it could be as it had been with Breck Wingate, another observer. Hulser shivered at the memory. They had found Wingate, hunched forward across his instruments, a neat hole through his chest from side to side, just below the armpits. Wind had whistled through the wall of the OP from a single bullet hole beside Wingate. The enemy had found him, and never known. Hulser glanced up nervously at the plywood walls. all that shielded him from the searching bullets, a wood shell designed to absorb the metal seekers and send back the sound of a bullet hitting a snowdrift. A rolled wad of plot paper filled a bullet hole made on some other watch near the top of the dome. Again, Hulser shivered. And again a bullet spanged against the broken tank. Then the ground rumbled and shook as a mortar shell zeroed the tank. "Discouraging us from using it as an OP," thought Hulser. He punched the backtrack relay to give the mortar's position to his own artillery, but without much hope. The enemy was beginning to use the new shift shells that confused backtrack. The phone beside his LD screens glowed red. Hulser leaned into the cone of silence, answered,
OP-114, Hulser.
The voice was Sergeant Chamberlain's.
What was that mortar shooting at, Wolfie?
Hulser gritted his teeth, explained about the tank. Chamberlain's voice barked through the phone.
We shouldn't have to call for an explanation of these things. Are you sure you're awake and alert?
Yes, Sarge.
Okay, keep your eyes open, Wolfie.
The red glow of the phone died. Hulser trembled with rage.
Wolfie.
He thought of Sergeant Mike Chamberlain, tall, overbearing, the irritating nasal twang in his voice. And he thought of what he'd like to do to Chamberlain's narrow, small-eyed face and its big nose. He considered calling back and asking for Schnozzle Chamberlain. Hulser grinned tightly. That'd get him. And he'd have to wait another 4 hours before he could do anything about it. But the thought of the certain consequences in arousing Chamberlain's anger wiped the grin from Hulser's face. Something moved on his central screen. The fox. Or was it a fox? It moved across the frozen terrain toward the shattered tank. Stopped halfway. A fox investigating the strange odors of cordite and burned gas? He wondered. Or is it the enemy? With this thought came near panic. If any living flesh above a certain minimum size, roughly 50 kilos, moved too close to an OP without the proper IFF, the hut and all in it exploded in a blinding flash of thermite. Everything incinerated to prevent the enemy from capturing the observer's life detector shield. Hulser studied the grid of his central screen. It reminded him of a game he'd played as a boy. Two children across a room from one another, ruled graph paper hidden behind books in their laps. Each player's paper contained secretly marked squares, 4 in a row, a battleship, 3 in a row, a destroyer, 2 in a... Again the glow on his screen moved toward the tank crater. He stared at the grid intersection above the glowing spot, and far away in his mind a thought giggled at him. Call and tell him you have a battleship on your screen at 06C. That'd get you a Section 8 right out of this man's army. Out of the army. His thoughts swerved abruptly to New Oakland, to Carol Jean. To think of her having our baby back there and... Again the... Fox? Moved toward the tank crater, but his mind was hopelessly caught now in New Oakland. He thought of all the lonely years before Carol. To work 5 days a week at Planetary Chemicals, the library and endless pages of books. And another channel of his mind commented, "You scattered your interests too widely." The tiny cubbyhole rooms of his apartment, the tasteless... Now, the fox darted up to the tank crater, skirted it. Hulser's mind noted the movement, went right on with its reverie. Then Carol. Why couldn't we have found each other sooner? Just 1 month together and... Another small glowing object came on the screen near the point where he'd seen the first one. It, too, darted toward the tank crater. Hulser was back in the chill present, a deadly suspicion gnawing him. The enemy has a new type of shield. Not as good as ours. It merely reduces image size. Or is it a pair of foxes? Indecision tore at him. They could have a new shield, he thought. We don't have a corner on the scientific brains. And a piece of his mind wandered off in the new direction. The war within the war. The struggle for equipment superiority. A new weapon. A new shield. A better weapon. A better shield. It was like a terrible ladder dripping with maimed flesh.
They could have a new shield?
His mind repeated. And another corner of his mind began to think about the shields, the complex flicker lattice that made human flesh transparent to... Abruptly, he froze. In all clarity, every diagram in place, every equation, every formula complete, all spread out in his mind, was the instrument he knew could end this war. Uncontrolled shivering took over his body. He swallowed in a dry throat. His gaze stayed on the screen before him. The two glow spots joined, moved into the tank crater. Hulser bent into the cone of silence at his phone.
This is OP-114. I have two greenies at coordinates 06C sub TR. I think they're setting up an OP.
Are you sure?
It was Chamberlain's nasal twang.
Of course I'm sure.
We'll see.
The phone went dead. Hulser straightened, wet his lips with his tongue.
Will they send a plane for a sky look? They don't really trust me.
A rending explosion at the tank crater answered him. Immediately a rattle of small arms fire sprang up from the enemy lines. Bullets quested through the gray snow.
It was an enemy OP. Now they know we have an observer out here.
Another bullet found the dome of the OP. Hulser stared at the hole in terror. What if they kill me? My idea will die with me. The war will go on, and... He jerked toward the phone, screamed into it.
Get me out of here! Get me out of here! Get me out of here!
When they found him, Hulser was still mumbling the five words. Chamberlain's lanky form crouched before the OP's crawl hole. The three muffled figures behind him ignored the OP, their heads turning, eyes staring off into the snow, rifles at the ready. The enemy's small arms fire had stopped.
Another one's broke, thought Chamberlain. I thought shame might make him last a little while longer.
He dragged Hulser out into the snow, hissed,
What is it, you? Why'd you drag us out into this?
Hulser swallowed, said,
Sarge, please believe me. I know how to detonate enemy explosives from a distance without even knowing where the explosives are. I can...
Detonate explosives from a distance?
Chamberlain's eyes squinted until they looked like twin pieces of flint.
Another one for the head shrinkers, unless we can shock him out of it, he thought.
He said,
You've gone off your rocker, you have. Now, you get down at them instruments and...
Hulser paled.
No, Sarge. I have to get back where
I could shoot your head off right where you...
Fear, frustration, anger, all of the complex, pressure-born emotions in Hulser forced the words out of him.
You big-nosed, ignorant lump! I can end this war, you hear?
His voice climbed.
Take me back to the lieutenant! I'm going to send your kind back under the rocks, you...
Chamberlain's fist caught Hulser on the side of the head, sent him tumbling into the snow. Even as he fell, Hulser's mind said,
But you told him, man. You finally told him.
The sergeant glanced back at his companions, thought,
If the enemy heard him, we've had it.
He motioned one of the other men in close.
Mitch, take the watch on this OP. We'll have to get Hulser back.
The other nodded. Ducked through the crawl hole. Chamberlain bent over Hulser.
He is stinking coward,
he hissed.
I've half a mind to kill you where you sit, but I'm going to take you in so's I can have the personal pleasure of watching you crawl when they turn the heat on you. Now get on your feet, and you get to walking.
Major Tony Lipari, Tony the Lip to his men, leaned against the canvas-padded wall of his dugout, hands clasped behind his head. He was a thin, oily-looking man, with black hair, parted in the middle, and slicked to his head like two beetle wings. In civilian life, he had sold athletic supplies from a wholesale house. He had once worn a turban to an office party, and it had been like opening a door on his appearance. Somewhere in his ancestry, there had been a Moor. The major was tired. Casualty reports, endless casualty reports, and irritable, faintly nervous. "We don't have enough men to man the OPs now," he thought. "Do we have to lose another one to the psych boys?" He said,
"The lieutenant!"
His voice came out in a nervous squeak, and he stopped, cleared his throat.
"The lieutenant has told me the entire story, Corporal. Frankly, it strikes me as utterly fantastic."
Corporal Hulser stood at attention before the major. "Do I have the major's permission to speak?" Lipari nodded.
"Please do."
"Sir, I was a chemist. I mean, as a civilian. I got into this branch because I dabbled in electronics, and they happened to need LD observers more than they needed chemists. Now, with our shields from..."
He broke off, suddenly overwhelmed by the problem of convincing Major Lipari.
"He's telling me we need LD observers," thought Lipari.
He said,
"Well, go on, Hulser."
"Sir, do you know anything about chemistry?"
"A little."
"What I mean is, do you understand redox equations and substitution reactions of..."
"Yes, yes, go on."
Hulser swallowed, thought, "He doesn't understand. Why won't he send me back to someone who does?" He said,
"Sir, you're aware that the insulation layer of our LD shield is a special kind of protection for..."
"Certainly. Insulates the wearer from the electrical charge of the suit."
Hulser goggled at the major.
"Insulates? Oh, no, sir. Begging the major's pardon, but..."
"Is this necessary, Corporal?"
asked Lipari, and he thought,
"If he'd only stop this act and get back to work, it's so obvious he's faking. If,
sir, didn't you get the..."
"I had a full quota of LD shield orientation when they called me back into the service," said Lipari. "Infantry's my specialty, of course. Korea, you know. But I understand how to operate a shield." "Go on, Corporal."
He kicked his chair away from the wall. "Sir, what that insulation layer protects the wearer from is a kind of pseudo-substitution reaction in the skin. The suit's field can confuse the body into producing nitrogen bubbles at..."
"Yes, Hulser, I know all that. But what's this have to do with your wonderful idea?"
Hulser took a deep breath.
"Sir, I can build a projector on the principle of the LD suits that will produce an artificial substitution reaction in any explosive. I'm sure I can."
"You're sure?"
"Yes, sir. For example, I could set up such a reaction in Trinox that would produce fluorine and ionized hydrogen, in minute quantities, of course, but sufficient that any nearby field source would detonate..."
"How would you make sure there was such a field in the enemy storage area?"
"Sir, everybody wears LD shields of one kind or another. They're field generators. Or an internal combustion motor, or just anything. If you have an explosive mixture collapsing from one system into another in the presence of fluorine and hydrogen..."
He shrugged.
"It'd explode if you looked cross-eyed at it."
Lipari cleared his throat.
"I see."
Again, he leaned back against the wall. The beginning of an eye-strain headache tugged at his temples.
"Now the put-up or shut-up," he thought.
He said,
"How do we build this wonderful projector, Corporal?"
"Sir, I'll have to sit down with some machinists and some E-techs and..."
"Corporal, I'll decide who sits down with whom among my men. Now, I'll tell you what you do. You just draw up the specifications for your projector and leave them with me. I'll see that they get into the proper hands through channels.
Sir, it's not that simple. I have all the specs in my head now, yes, but in anything like this, you have to work out bugs that...
We have plenty of technical experts who can do that, said Lipari,
and he thought, why doesn't he just give up? I gave him the chance to duck out gracefully, scribble something on paper, give it to me, that's the end of it.
But, sir... Corporal, my orderly will give you paper and pencil. You just...
Sir, it can't be done that way.
Lipari rubbed his forehead.
Corporal Halser, I am giving you an order. You will sit down and produce the plans and specifications for your projector. You will do it now.
Halser tasted a sourness in his mouth. He swallowed. And that's the last we'd ever hear of Corporal Larry Halser, he thought. Tony the Lip would get the credit. He said,
Sir, after you submit my plans, what would you do if someone asked, for example, how the polar molecules of...
You will explain all of these things in your outline. Do I make myself clear, Corporal?
Sir, it would take me 6 months to produce plans that would anticipate every...
You're stalling, Corporal!
Major Lipari pushed himself forward, came to his feet. He lowered his voice.
Let's face it, Halser. You're faking. I know it. You know it. You just had a belly full of war, and you decided you wanted out.
Halser shook his head from side to side.
It's not that simple, Corporal. Now, I've shown you in every way I can that I understand this... That I'm willing to,
begging the Major's pardon, but
you will do one of two things, Corporal Halser. You either produce the diagrams, sketches, or whatever, to prove that you do have a worthy idea, or you will go back to your unit. I'm done fooling with you.
Sir, don't you under...
I could have you shot under the Articles of War.
And Lipari thought, that's what he needs, a good shock. Bitter frustration almost overwhelmed Halser. He felt the same kind of anger that had goaded him to attack Sergeant Chamberlain.
Major, enough people know about my idea by now that at least some of them would wonder if you hadn't shot the goose that laid the golden egg.
Lipari's headache was full-blown now. He pushed his face close to Halser's.
I have some alternatives to a firing squad, Corporal.
Halser returned Lipari's angry glare.
It has occurred to me, sir, that this project would suddenly become our project, and then your project, and somewhere along the line a mere corporal would get lost.
Lipari's mouth worked wordlessly.
Presently he said, That did it, Halser. I'm holding you for a general court. There's one thing I can do without cooking any goose but yours. And that ends the matter as far as I'm concerned, thought Lipari. What a day!
He turned toward the door of his dugout.
Sergeant!
The door opened to admit Chamberlain's beanpole figure. He crossed the room, came to attention before Lipari, saluted.
Sir, this man is under arrest, Sergeant. Said Lipari. Take him back to area headquarters under guard and have him held for a general court. On your way out, send in my orderly.
Chamberlain saluted.
Yes, sir.
He turned, took Halser's arm.
Come along, Halser.
Lipari turned away, groped on a corner shelf for his aspirin. He heard the door open and close behind him, and it was not until this moment that he asked himself,
Could that crackpot actually have had a workable idea?
He found the aspirin, shrugged the thought away.
Fantastic.
Halser sat on an iron cot with his head in his hands. The cell walls around him were flat, riveted steel. It was a space exactly the length of the cot, twice as wide as the cot. At his left, next to the foot of the bed, was a barred door. To his right, At the other end of the floor space were a folding wash basin with water closet under. The cells smelled foul, despite an overriding stink of disinfectant.
"Why don't they get it over with?" he asked himself. 3 days of this madhouse. How long are they?"
The cell door rattled. Hulser looked up. A wizened figure in a colonel's uniform stood on the other side of the bars. He was a tiny man, gray-haired, eyes like a curious bird, a dried parchment skin. In the proper costume, he would have looked like a medieval sorcerer. A youthful MP sergeant stepped into view, unlocked the door, stood aside. The colonel entered the cell.
"Well, well," he said.
Hulser came to his feet, saluted.
"Will you be needing me, sir?"
asked the MP sergeant.
"Eh?"
the colonel turned.
"Oh, no, sergeant, just leave that door open and..."
"But, sir..."
"Nobody could get out of this cell block, could they, sergeant?"
"No, sir, but..."
"Then just leave the door open and run along."
"Yes, sir."
The sergeant saluted, frowned, turned away. His footsteps echoed down the metal floor of the corridor. The colonel turned back to Hulser.
"So, you're the young man with the bright ideas."
Hulser cleared his throat.
"Yes, sir."
The colonel glanced once around the cell.
"I'm Colonel Page of General Savage's staff, Chemical Warfare."
Hulser nodded.
"The general's adjutant suggested that I come over and talk to you,"
said Page.
"He thought a chemist might..."
"Page," said Hulser, "you're not the Dr. Edmund Page who did the work on pseudolithium." The colonel's face broke into a pleased smile.
"Why, yes, I am.
I read everything about your work that I could get my hands on," said Hulser. "It struck me that if you just..." His voice trailed off.
"Do go on," said Page.
Hulser swallowed. "Well, if you just move from organic chemistry into inorganic, that..." He shrugged.
"I might have induced direct chemical rather than organic reactions?"
asked Page.
"Yes, sir."
"That thought didn't occur to me until I was on my way over here,"
said Page. He gestured toward the cot.
"Do sit down."
Hulser slumped back to the cot. Page looked around, finally squeezed past Hulser's knees, sat down on the lid of the water closet.
"Now, let's find out just what your idea is."
Hulser stared at his hands.
"I've discussed this with the general," said Page. "We feel that you may know what you're talking about. We would deeply appreciate a complete explanation." "What do I have to lose?" asked Hulser. "You may have reason for feeling bitter," said Page, "but after reading the charges against you, I would say that you've been at least partly responsible for your present situation."
He glanced at his wristwatch.
"Now, tell me exactly how you propose to detonate munitions at a distance. This projector you've talked about..."
Hulser took a deep breath.
"This is a chemist," he thought. "Maybe I can convince him."
He looked up at Page, began explaining. Presently the colonel interrupted.
"But it takes enormous amounts of energy to change the atomic..."
"I'm not talking about changing atomic structure in that sense, sir. Don't you see it? I merely set up an artificial condition as though a catalyst were present. A pseudo-catalyst. And this brings out of the static mixture substances that are already there. Ionized hydrogen from moisture. Fluorine from the actual components in the case of Trinox. White phosphorus from ditrate, nitric oxide, and rhombic sulfur from common gunpowder." Page wet his lips with his tongue.
"But what makes you think that in a non-organic system the presence of the pseudo-catalyst..."
He shook his head.
"Of course! How stupid of me! You'd first get a polar reaction. just as I did with pseudolithium, and that would be the first step into... His eyes widened, and he stared at Hulser. My dear boy! I believe you've opened an entirely new field in non-organic chemistry.
Do you see it, sir?
Of course I see it.
Page got to his feet.
You'd be creating an artificial radical with unstable perimeter. The presence of the slightest bit of moisture in that perimeter would give you your ionized hydrogen and...
He clapped his hands like a small boy in glee.
Kapowie!
Hulser smiled. Page looked down at him.
Corporal, I do believe your projector might work. I confess that I don't understand about field lattices and these other electronic matters, but you apparently do.
Yes, sir.
How did you ever stumble onto this?
Asked Page. I was thinking about the lattice effect in our life detector systems, when suddenly, there it was, the complete idea. Page nodded.
It was one of those things that had to remain dormant until the precisely proper set of circumstances.
Page squeezed past Hulser's knees.
No, 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 stay right there. I'm going to set up a meeting with Colonel Allenby of the LD section, and I'll get in someone with more of a mechanical bent. And probably, Captain Stevens.
He nodded.
Now, Corporal, you just stay right here until...
His glance darted around the cell, and he laughed nervously.
Don't you worry, young man. We'll have you out of here in a few hours.
Hulser was to look back on the 5 weeks of the first phase in Operation Big Boom as a time of hectic unreality. Corps ordered the project developed in General Savage's reserve area after a set of preliminary plans had been shipped outside. The thinking was that there'd be less chance of a security leak that close to a combat zone, and that the vast barrens of the reserve area offered better opportunity for a site free of things that could detonate mysteriously and lead to unwanted questions. But Corps was taking no chances. They ringed the area with special detachments of MPs, recording specialists moved in on the project, copied everything for shipment stateside. They chose an open tableland well away from their own munitions for the crucial test. It was a barren, windy place, gray rocks poking up from frozen earth. The long black worm of a power cable stretched away into the distance behind the test shelter. A weasel delivered Hulser and Page to the test site. The projector box sat on the seat between them. It was housed in a green container 2 feet square and 4 feet long. A glass tube protruded from one end. A power connection, sealed, and with a red Do Not Connect sign, centered the opposite end. A tripod mounting occupied one side at the balance point. The morning was cold and clear, with a brittle snap to the air. The sky had a deep cobalt quality, almost varnished in its intensity. About 50 people were gathered for the test. They were strung out through the shelter, a long shed open along one side. An empty tripod stood near the open side and almost in the center. On both sides of the tripod, technicians sat before recording instruments. Small black wires trailed away ahead of them toward an ebony mound almost a mile from the shed and directly opposite the open side. General Savage already was on the scene, talking with a stranger who had arrived that morning under an impressive air cover. The stranger had worn civilian clothes. Now he was encased in an issue parka and snow pants. He didn't look or act like a civilian, and it was noted that General Savage addressed him as Sir. The general was a brusque, thick-bodied man, with the overbearing confidence of someone secure in his own ability. His face held a thick-nosed, square-jawed, bulldog look. In fatigues without insignia, he could have been mistaken for a sergeant. He looked the way a hard, old-line sergeant is expected to look.
General Savage's men called him Me Tarzan, mainly because he took snow baths, mother naked, in sub-zero weather. A white-helmeted security guard ringed the inside of the test shed. Hulser noted that they wore no sidearms, carried no weapons, except handheld bayonets. He found himself thinking that he would not have been surprised to see them carrying crossbows. General Savage waved to Page as the colonel and Hulser entered the shed. Colonel Page returned the gesture, stopped before a smooth-cheeked lieutenant near the tripod.
"Lieutenant," said Page, "have all explosives, except the test stack, been removed from the area?"
The lieutenant froze to ramrod attention, saluted, "Yes, sir, colonel." Page took a cigarette from his pocket.
"Let me have your cigarette lighter, please, lieutenant."
"Yes, sir." The lieutenant fumbled in a pocket, withdrew a chrome lighter, handed it to Page. Colonel Page took the lighter in his hand, looked at it for a moment, hurled both lighter and cigarette out into the snow. The lighter landed about 60 feet away. The lieutenant paled, then blushed. The colonel said,
"Every cigarette lighter, every match, and check with everyone to see that they took those special pills at least 4 hours ago. We don't want any internal combustion without a motor around it."
The lieutenant looked distraught.
"Yes, sir."
"And, lieutenant, stop the last weasel and have the driver wait to cart the stuff you collect out of our area."
"Yes, sir."
The lieutenant hurried away. Page turned back to Hulser, who had mounted the projector on its tripod and now stood beside it.
"All ready, sir," said Hulser. "Shall I connect the cable?"
"What do you think?"
asked Page.
"We're as ready as we'll ever be."
"Okay. Connect it. Then stand by with the switch in your hands."
Hulser turned to comply. And now, as the moment of the critical test approached, he felt his legs begin to tremble. He felt sure that everyone could see his nervousness. A tense stillness came over the people in the shed. General Savage and his visitor approached. The general was explaining the theory of the projector. His visitor nodded. Seen close up, the other man gave the same impression of hard competence that radiated from General Savage, only more competent. Harder. His cheekbones were like two ridges of tan rock beneath cavernous sockets, brooding dark eyes. And General Savage pointed to the black mound of explosives in the distance.
"We have instruments in there with the explosives, sir. The wires connect them with our recorders here in the shed. We have several types of explosives to be tested, including kerosene, gasoline, engine oil. Everything we could lay our hands on, except atomics. But if these things blow, then we'll know the projector also will work on atomics."
The visitor spoke, and his voice came out with a quality like a stick dragged through gravel.
"It was explained to me that, the theory being correct, this projector will work on any petroleum fuel, including coal."
"Yes, sir," said Savage. "It is supposed to ignite coal. We have a few lumps in a sack to one side. You can't see it because of the snow, but our instruments will tell us which of these things are affected."
He glanced at Hulser.
"If any."
Colonel Page returned from checking the recording instruments. Savage turned to the colonel.
"Are we ready, Ed?"
"Yes, General."
He glanced at Hulser, nodded.
"Let's go, Larry. Give it power."
Hulser depressed the switch in his hand, involuntarily closed his eyes, then snapped them open and stared at the distant explosives. A low humming arose from the projector. Page spoke to the general.
"It'll take a little time for the effect to build up."
As he started to say up, the mound of explosives went up in a giant roaring and rumbling. Colonel Page was left staring at the explosion, his mouth shaped to say
pee. Steam and dust hid the place where the explosives had been. The gravel voice of the visitor spoke behind Hulser.
Well, there goes the whole shooting match, General, and I do mean shooting.
It's what we were afraid of, sir, said Savage. But there's no help for it now. He sounded bitter. Hulser was struck by the bitterness in both voices. He turned, became conscious that the lieutenant whom Page had reprimanded was beating at a flaming breast pocket, face livid. The people around him were laughing, trying to help. Page had hurried along the line of recorders, was checking each one. The significance of the lieutenant's antics suddenly hit Hulser. Matches! He forgot his spare matches after losing his cigarette lighter. Hulser glanced to where the colonel had thrown the lighter, saw a black patch in the snow. Page returned from checking the recorders.
We can't be sure about the coal, but as nearly as we can determine, it touched off everything else in the stack.
He put an arm on Hulser's shoulder.
This young genius has won the war for us.
Savage turned, scowled at Hulser. The civilian snorted. But Hulser was staring out at the explosion crater, a look of euphoria on his face. The technicians were moving out into the area now, probing cautiously for unexploded fragments. The general and his visitor exchanged a glance that could have meant anything. Savage signaled his radio operator to call for transportation. Presently, a line of weasels came roaring up to the test site. Savage took Hulser's arm in a firm grip.
You'd better come with us. You're a valuable piece of property now.
Hulser's mind came back to the curious conversation between Savage and the visitor after the explosion, and he was struck by the odd sadness in the general's voice. Could he be an old war dog, sorry to see it end? Somehow, on looking at the general, that didn't fit. They sped across the barrens to the base. Hulser, uncomfortable between the general and his visitor. Apparently, no one wanted to discuss what had just happened. Hulser was made uncomfortable by the lack of elation around him. He looked at the back of the driver's neck, but that told him nothing. They strode into the general's office, an oblong room without windows. Maps lined the walls. A low partition separated one space containing two barren tables from another space containing three desks, one set somewhat apart. They crossed to the separate desk. Savage indicated his visitor.
This is Mr. Sladen.
There was a slight hesitation on the mister. Hulser suppressed the desire to salute, shook hands. The other man had a hard grip in an uncalloused hand. Sladen's gravelly baritone came out brusque and commanding.
Brief him, General. I'll go get my people and their gear together. We'll have to head right back.
Savage nodded.
Thank you, sir. I'll get right at it.
Sladen cast a speculative look at Hulser.
Make sure he understands clearly what has just happened. I don't believe he's considered it.
Yes, sir.
Sladen departed. Hulser felt an odd sinking sensation in his stomach. Savage said,
I'm not rank happy, Hulser, and we haven't much time. We're going to forget about military formality for a few minutes.
Hulser nodded without speaking.
Do you know what has just happened? Asked Savage.
Yes, sir.
But what puzzles me is that you people don't seem pleased about our gaining the whip hand so we can win this war. It's not certain that we have the whip hand.
Savage sat down at his desk, picked up a book bound in red leather.
You mean the enemy? Bright ideas like yours just seem to float around in the air, Hulser. They may already have it, or they could be working on it. Otherwise, I'd have seen that your brainstorm was buried. It seems that once human beings realize something can be done, they're not satisfied until they've done it.
Have there been any signs that the enemy...
No. But neither have they seen any signs of our new weapon. I hope.
The point is, we do have it, and we're going to use it.
We'll probably overwhelm them before they can do anything about it. And that'll be the end of this war.
But if explosives are made obsolete, that'll be the end to all wars, protested Hulser. That's what I'm concerned about.
The general sneered.
Nothing, my bright-eyed young friend, has thus far made war impossible. When this one's over, it'll just be a matter of time until there's another war, both sides using your projector.
But, sir, so the next war will be fought with horse cavalry, swords, crossbows, and lances, said Savage. And there'll be other little improvements.
He slammed the red book onto his desk, surged to his feet.
Elimination of explosives only makes espionage, poisons, poison gas, germ warfare, all of these a necessity.
How can you?
Don't you understand, Hulser? You've made the military use of explosives impossible. That means gasoline. The internal combustion motor is out. That means jet fuels. Airplanes are out. That means gunpowder. Everything from the smallest sidearm to the biggest cannon is out.
Certainly, but...
But we have other alternatives, Hulser. We have the weapons King Arthur used. And we have some modern innovations. Poison gases. Curare-tipped crossbow bolts. Bacterial...
But the Geneva Convention...
Geneva Convention be damned. And that's just what will happen to it as soon as a big enough group of people decide to ignore it.
General Savage hammered a fist on his desk.
Get this! Violence is a part of human life. The lust for power is a part of human life. As long as people want power badly enough, they'll use any means to get it, fair or foul, peaceful or otherwise.
I think you're being a pessimist, sir.
Maybe I am. I hope I am.
But I come from a long line of military people. We've seen some things to make us pessimists.
But the pressures for peace
have thus far not been strong enough to prevent wars, Hulser.
The general shook his head.
I'll tell you something, my young friend. When I first saw the reference to your ideas and the charges against you, I had the sinking sensation one gets when going down for the third time. I hoped against hope that you were wrong, but I couldn't afford not to investigate. I hoped that Major Lipari and Sergeant Chamberlain had you pegged for...
The general stopped, glared at Hulser.
There's another bone I have to pick with you. Your treatment of two fine soldiers was nothing short of juvenile. If it wasn't for the Liparis and the Chamberlains, you'd be getting 30 lashes every morning from your local slave keeper.
But, sir,
don't but sir me, Hulser. If there was time before you leave, I'd have you deliver personal apologies to both of them.
Hulser blushed, shook his head.
I don't know. All I really know is that I was sure my idea would work, and that Lipari and Chamberlain didn't understand. And I knew if I was killed, or if my idea wasn't developed, the enemy might get it first.
Savage leaned back against his desk, passed a hand across his eyes.
You were right, of course. It's just that you were bucking the system, and you're not the right kind to buck the system. Your kind usually fails when you try.
Hulser sighed. You're now a valuable piece of property, my lad. So don't feel sorry for yourself. You'll be sent home where you can be around when your wife has that child. Hulser looked surprised.
Oh, yes. We found out about her, said Savage. We thought at first you were just working a good dodge to get home to her.
He shrugged.
You'll probably have it fairly soft now. You'll be guarded and coddled.
you'll be expected to produce another act of genius.
The Lord knows.
Maybe you are a genius. You wait and see, sir. I think this will mean an end to all wars. The general suddenly looked thoughtful.
Hulser, a vastly underrated and greatly despised writer, in some circles, once said, "There is nothing more difficult to take in hand, more perilous to conduct, or more uncertain in its success, than to take the lead in the introduction of a new order of things."
That's a very deep statement, Hulser. And there you are, way out in front, with a new order of things.
I hope for the sake of that child you're going to have, for the sake of all children, that we don't have another war.
He shrugged.
But I don't hold out too...
Sladen popped back into the office.
Our air cover's coming up, General. We'll have to take him like he is. Send his gear along later, will you?
Certainly, sir. Savage straightened, stuck out his right hand, shook with Hulser.
Good luck, Hulser. You take what I said to heart. It's the bitter truth that men of war have to live with. You weren't attacking the source of the problem with your bright idea. You were attacking one of the symptoms.
Savage's left hand came up from his desk with the red book.
Here's a gift for that child you're going to have.
He pressed the book into Hulser's hands.
The next generation will need to understand this book.
Hulser had time to say, "Thank you, sir." Then he was propelled out the door by Sladen. It was not until he was on the plane, winging south, that Hulser had an opportunity to examine the book. Then he gripped it tightly in both hands, stared out the window at the sea of clouds. The book was a limited edition copy, unexpurgated, of the works of Niccolo Machiavelli, the master of deceit and treachery. Epilogue. Many people labor under the misapprehension that the discovery of the Hulser detonator was made in a secret government laboratory. In actuality, the genius of Dr. Lawrence Hulser was first seen on the Arctic battlefields of 1972, where he conceived his idea and where that idea was immediately recognized. Beecher Carson, The Coming of the Sword, A History of Ancient and Modern Wars, Volume 6, page 112.